So I'm going to start off with a little bit of show and tell. This image of Padmasambhava was given to me at my Mitra ceremony about 4 years ago by Dattishri and Ahimsika. It was actually painted by Ahimsika. And it's really striking, isn't it? Padmasambhava is often kind of like depicted with these kind of slightly frowning eyebrows that I feel quite an affinity with because I'm quite fond of a frown myself. I think sometimes even if I'm not particularly upset or anything, I just have a natural kind of frown. Maybe it's my eyebrows or something. Anyway, I'll just hold this up. But around the time I became a Mitra, I was just discovering the world of images, poetry and ritual, which is something that was pretty much neglected for all of my largely rational and scientific life. And I'd recently just come back from my first ever retreat at Padmaloka. And after being immersed in that amazing shrine room, surrounded by those amazing images, the poetry, the mantra, the ritual, I'd come away sort of like having discovered what seemed to be a new mysterious language that never existed before, and having uncovered a side of me that seemed to respond to this new language that I never knew existed before. So it seemed to respond even though my rational mind didn't really get it. And on that retreat, I was fortunate enough to have some of the more bizarre, esoteric, tantric aspects of traditional Padmasambhava images explained to me. So, for example, the three severed heads on the staff in various states of decay, the skull cup, and a strong memory of Padmavajra saying, his booming voice saying, "Pay urgent attention to impermanence." So I came away with that. And what really struck me when I saw this picture was Padmasambhava is quite ordinary in this. It's got none of those tantric symbols of impermanence, but still, it's just those eyes, those piercing eyes, and that look. To me, it just gets right through, right into the core, into the belly of the beast, as it were, and says, pay urgent attention to impermanence. And more personally, what I feel this is asking is saying to me, what is going on? What are you doing, Alex? What are you doing? So I'm just going to pop this down here. I can still feel him looking at me. And I must admit that at first I found that image quite hard to look at because of the question I felt it was asking of me. Because it was a question that I didn't want to address. So I didn't go and hang it up on the wall or put it up on the shelf. Instead, I put it away in a cupboard. And in a way, I was also putting away that question in a cupboard as well. But of course, it's not as simple as that, is it? So the question I felt was telling me to look at the tension that was building between my firmly established life on the ignoble quest, the quest for material wealth and status, and the noble quest, which I was just starting out here at the Buddhist Center, the quest for freedom on the spiritual path. But I didn't want to do that. I'd convinced myself that I could do both of them, or at least I could postpone my commitment to the noble quest, postpone my commitment to the spiritual life until after I'd reached a certain level of material comfort, or until I've just got that one more little promotion, and then I would get on seriously with the spiritual life. And at that time, I'd been working for the New York Stock Exchange in London for a number of years, and I was really immersed in the culture of the young finance professionals. Even though I was a lowly, rather unglamorous technologist, I still picked up the same kind of aspirations, values, material values of the young finance community, surrounded by all these luxury shops, adverts, promises of a life of ease, etc. However, I was becoming increasingly frustrated that I wasn't part of this elite community. this elite community whom I was serving in my job day to day. And I didn't share in the same financial rewards. And this, for me, led to a growing sense of frustration and separateness. And furthermore, my spiritual unfolding at the time was also kind of undermining all of these material values that I'd established on the Ignoble Quest. So there was significant kind of tension and confusion building up. But I felt that Padmasambhava's question through that look wasn't about choosing one path over another or abruptly cutting off part of my experience, but it was more of an invitation to turn towards that tension, that difficulty, and take it along with me on the spiritual path. So the example I'm going to use here is a little story from my personal experience at work that seemed really trivial at the time. It was just an event during a normal day at work, but it's turned out that over the years, and reflecting on this experience over the years as well, it's turned to be quite revealing about the possibilities for transformation. So at the time, I was working with some financial software called a Bloomberg terminal. You've probably seen these on the news, even if you don't know what you're looking at. It's those big screens that you see bankers and traders having with lots of flashing numbers that tell them if a stock is going up or down in price. You know, red for going down, green for going up. But it's also a digital network for a community of bankers, hedge fund managers to share information. And one day I was using one of these terminals and I came across a feature on it that wasn't really related to do with work at all. It was a feature called the POSH pages. Basically all the functions had acronyms and this one was called POSH, which just happened to be called, you know, spelled POSH. And this was basically a classified advert system for the users of the software. So something like Gumtree, if you like. So they could, you know, buy and sell stuff. So buy and sell their own personal items. And of course, because of the nature of who was using it, so like bankers and fund managers, it tended to be quite full of luxury items. Ridiculously expensive supercars. So, you know, a Lamborghini, only 100 miles, and it was like £500,000. Someone selling a bespoke Swiss watch, you know, it said worn twice and it was like £20,000. And this, you know, went on and on, yachts, villas, all sorts of things. And I found it fascinating to look at. I mean, who wouldn't, you know, it's just great being nosy like that, isn't it? But at the same time, I found it very alienating because I felt very separate because my life just wasn't like that. And I ended up making all sorts of stories and assumptions and generalizations and views about them, the sort of like the privileged elite that I'd sort of like even separated myself further away from. And this started to become quite painful. Sometime later, probably about a year later, I was reflecting on this experience again. And this time I'd had some Dharma study under my belt. And I became very much aware that back then I was definitely in the realm of the jealous gods, the titans on the Buddhist wheel of life, if you remember. Sort of like looking over the wall into the garden of the god realm and, you know, enviously. But it also became obvious to me that each one of those adverts that I'd seen on those POSH pages, each one of those adverts represented dissatisfaction with a material item. You know, these people were selling those items because they no longer provided happiness. Perhaps they wanted next year's model of car or yacht. So in a way, I kind of like felt vindicated. You know, this was obvious proof of the unsatisfactoriness of material objects. But sadly, I didn't feel any peace. In fact, I felt quite the opposite. I felt that the feeling of separation had just grown even more. It was even more pronounced. It was almost as if in my mind I was saying, no, you're doing it wrong, chasing after all of this stuff. I'm right, I know the Dharma. So that feeling of separation had got actually even worse. And obviously I was firmly still in the realm of the jealous gods, the Titans, shouting at the gods over the wall. But recently, I was reflecting on this same experience again. And this is probably 5 years now after the original actual experience. So it's something I've just carried in my memory through my life. And I was recalling how each one of those adverts in the list also had the seller's name against it. And it also had a little green dot to indicate that the seller was online and that they were available. You know, I could have contacted them immediately if I wanted to. And I realised that every one of those adverts represented someone's dissatisfaction with the object that they were selling. That this was a real person's dissatisfaction, dukkha, or suffering. Now, I know that, you know, this is quite superficial suffering, and there's a lot of very serious suffering in the world, so I understand if you find it hard to have sympathy, but in a way that's not the point. The point is that this represented a significant personal shift for the way that I was seeing the world. I'd acknowledged the green dots against the names, the aliveness of those sellers, those people. I'd acknowledged their desire to get rid of those objects that weren't making them happy anymore. And I felt an affinity that I had those same feelings about objects in my world as well. It's the same dissatisfaction. And it's the same dissatisfaction that we all feel with the mundane life. So those old strong feelings of aversion and separateness, the views I'd created, the boundaries of them and me, they all started to at least seem a little bit looser. In fact, they were probably being transformed, because I even now felt some degree of connection to those fellow human beings. Behind, you know, I was seeing past those green dots and past the crude generalizations that I'd made. And most of all, I felt free from the tyranny that was going on in my own mind. And I was probably finally out of the realm of the jealous gods, at least for the time being. So I think this look has really kind of like got into that, but I feel that it's perhaps not stopped yet. I'm probably going to get a lot more out of this picture. So thank you, Padmasambhava.